us, the boys at the Comedy Fix. Welcome back. Welcome back to us. This is our 66th episode. And the last time we dropped an episode was October 19th, 2021. The title of that one was Control in Performance. I recently got a message from somebody asking when the Comedy Fix would be back. And I said, when we have something to say. When we have something to say. And by we, I mean, you know me, it's Chris Alvarado. And I'm always joined by my boys, Jamie Parkin and Sam Miller. Gentlemen, hi.
Hello.
Hey, Happy New Year. In February.
admittedly, a little rusty at this. I had to find my cords. Yeah. I've since got a new laptop and painted my background.
The background looks great.
It looks great.
Thanks.
So, we were talking a little bit, like, you know, what should this episode be about? And there were specific topics. And then I kind of was just like, I just want to like chat. And I know we're going to find what this episode needs to be about organically. A couple things come to mind. First of all, I've been teaching and coaching more than ever. And the world is a little more opened up. So I've been watching a lot of shows, been in a few of them. And that's interesting. Also, auditions are coming around for the West Side Comedy Theater for their resident team situation. And that's a whole avenue I would like to discuss. There's a lot popping. There's a lot popping in the world of performance, in improvisation. What's popping in your world, Sam?
It's been fun to see performances that are live starting to come back in person. Seeing some photos on Facebook or announcements of, I think the Pack Theater is coming back soon. And I know stand-up's been going for a while, but I don't know. It feels like people are starting to open up again. So maybe this improvisation thing, which we say has to be live, can maybe pick up some steam again. I don't know. The photos I saw from a performance, I was like, these could have been taken 2 years ago. This is the exact same thing. Are we just going right back to it? Like, what's the deal? I know.
Jamie, I mean, it's been a minute now, but we've done a couple of shows. We've done a couple of shows and had some fun. What's going on in your life as far as the arts are concerned?
Yeah, I am also very interested to see what improv looks like when we come back performatively and where people's heads are at individually, because I've been teaching a little bit here and there, well, regularly on Monday nights. But, and from what I've seen is I see a lot of people with a lot of boundaries that I think are interesting. And that's kind of something I've been thinking about lately in how do we ask students and performers to set aside what they think their boundaries are. You know, because I think people put a lot more boundaries on themselves than they actually have. And that gets really complicated, you know, how far to push a student, how much to push them, in what direction, you know, how much is good for them and how much is psychologically traumatic for them, mm-hmm, you know? So that's kind of what I've been thinking about. And I think I agree. I see a lot of performances coming back and I don't know that I see much difference. You know, everyone promised to have, you know, this was a time to like reflect and foster new ideas and really change the way. And it looks the same. It all looks the same to me. I mean, there's a little bit more diversity language around improv than maybe there was beforehand, but the improv looks the same.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it takes guts to make a move. It's funny. We say this all the time. I teach a bunch, but lately I haven't been teaching at the West Side. I've been teaching my own stuff just because of some scheduling. So I haven't really run into that boundaries stuff, Jamie, that you're talking about. Because, you know, student life is much different than even coaching or directing life, right? There's a freedom in coaching and directing that isn't there in the classroom, and maybe for good reason. But I will say the teams I'm coaching when we first get up are still doing what we've been seeing people do for a long time. Listen, last night I had a rehearsal with a new team. I know them individually, but just as a unit. And it just took a couple of moments at the top to give them permission to not have to do the things they've always done. And it was fantastic. and they look over at me like, holy shit. And it's fun to kind of unlock that moment. But what I realize is like, I'm not teaching anything. I'm not like, try this. I just go like, hey, you're allowed to make this process as painless as possible. I think for a lot of people, studying and performing improvisation has been painful and very stressful. And I'm trying to remove that from them. Though I will say, and I think about you guys all the time, sometimes I'm on a run, a directing or a coaching run, or even my own classes, and I'm starting to come up with my own little like tips and tricks, or I'm finding my own little maxims and rules, you know? I'm like, oh, this has been something I've been seeing a lot lately, you know? Show your work, something is an example. And then I'd be like, oh, hold on, pump the brakes. The whole idea of even this podcast and our relationship as a trio here has been to question things and break things down and all that stuff. And so it's weird how like you can find yourself finding new rules. I know I just said about 75 different things, guys, but whatever. It's the morning and my cold brew's pumping. That's been an interesting thing too, is to be like, oh shit.
Yeah,
I'm the bad guy.
That's the hardest part. Sam, I can see he's winding up for something before it.
No, I think it's so interesting to think of your evolution as an artist is going from one set of rules, realizing that they're only true to some extent that's maybe not true for you anymore. So you dissolve those rules and you end up finding new rules, right? And that's maybe sort of a process that can happen a number of times. It's fun to think of you
or
going
Sam.
Through.
Or Sam, it's like, and I think about like Jamie a lot in this sense, or in my head, like I'll go like, yeah, no rules. Let's go. Let's be free and express. And then I'll go like, well, I mean, that one does make sense. You know, we shouldn't say no, or you know what I mean? Whatever it is, I start to justify why that rule should kind of be there. It's interesting.
Well, that's what I was thinking, is it's hard. And you see this in social movements as well that are like, you know, fuck the man, anti-establishment. And then their answer is another establishment, you know? So it's like, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, fuck the rules. Try these ones instead, you know? It's like, how do we say fuck the rules without feeling the need to then give other rules over here? That's, I think, the biggest challenge.
Check this out. I'm going to toot my own horn for a second, but it was just an interesting moment. On Thursday night, that doesn't matter to anybody listening, a couple nights ago, I did an in-person workshop. And one of those people joining the workshop was somebody I had never met before. He was referred by someone else. Okay, great. And he's doing his first scene with some of my direction, a little bit of input. And in the middle of the scene, he goes, whoa. I'm like, you okay? He's like, wow, it's like a very emotional like experience. And he kind of had like unlocked this moment. It was really beautiful, but hear me out. All like my other students are like, yeah, kind of like, this is what we're doing here. Like, right, this kind of more emotional, slow down work. And I felt this thing simultaneously occur, which was pride, a few things, like happy for him, proud of myself for having like contributed to this moment. And then this third feeling of like, but hold on, like I'm also not your guru. Not that I know that's a lot. That's a big leap, but there was a weird, scary moment to be like, I had a hand in creating this moment for you, but I also don't want to tell you what to do. It's what we're saying. It's this weird battle of like, I just want to give you permission to continue to unlock and to continue to break down the things you think are supposed to be there. But then does my permission become a sort of guideline or rule? And then I get tripped up in that. And I'm telling you, I think a worse person, and I'm not perfect, but I will say my pride was short-lived because I was really overcome with those actual other feelings of like, because it was weird because everyone's like, yes, welcome. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is like that, like, for lack of a better term, like culty feeling, which I think some instructors would enjoy. And I'm not saying I'm an angel. It just, I felt almost the danger in that, you know?
That's really interesting. Yeah. That's really interesting to hear you say that, because I'm almost like reminded of religious figures and how they're the two sides of it, right? You can either be like very much an egotistical religious figure and all about the power and the pomp and all the trappings there, or you can kind of be the person who gives up all of that and is very like actively trying not to court it. And it's I think especially what I'm realizing too is the cult of personality from like the business of comedy and the business of entertainment, like it really does make you almost want to create that persona for yourself with the style and the social media. And so I can see that being a hard thing to lean into.
Well, because they tell us you got to brand yourself or you got to market yourself. And it's true. I want to continue working with more people. And listen, I really hope I'm not coming off as somebody who's like this, like saint. It's a battle. Like you said, I'm battling that courting that you said there, Sam. It's like, it also feels, it's a nice feeling when you see a student kind of level up or open up and you've aided in that process. That's a great feeling, like forever. I won't deny that. But then it's like, what's that next? I don't know. Am I one step away from being like, because this is how it's supposed to be done. Welcome to the church of Chris. You know what I mean? But also like, if I just go like, yeah, I'm nobody here. I'm just like helping. I'm just like giving you a space. Well, that's also not fully true. I have a lot of years of experience and stuff, and it's a little mangled. It's a little mangled, and it doesn't pop up a lot for me. It's just because it was a new student in my environment with students that I have taught. It was like, whoa. And I don't know. I mean, there are positives to that moment as well, but it's a little funky.
Jamie, have you ever made a student say whoa?
Yeah, but that's because I was crossing a line.
Right, right. It's a different intonation.
I've made you say same well for word, that same reason.
Different tone to it, maybe.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. But then, to be honest, I don't really teach my own pedagogy. I kind of have always taught at a studio, and I have to adopt their voice more than my own. And so I've actually had very little opportunity to teach in a way where if I got a whoa, it would mean something to me. You know, I can get a whoa teaching somebody else's voice, but that's less gratifying than I think the moment Chris had.
Mm-hmm. You know, though, respect to you, Jamie, because that's something I've battled with while teaching other institutions' curriculums, is like, you do have to honor that, whether you agree with everything being done. Well, you were in one of my most recent classes, Jamie. That's a weird balance. It's like, I have made a contract with this institution that I'm working for, that I'm going to do their work. And I think that needs to be honored. And like, there are those moments, Sam, where it's like, well, here's also like my opinion that goes against what this is, you know? And I'm guilty of that too. But at the end of the day, I think your spin, your take, a couple of ideas might be okay, but I think that's not fair to like overtake a classroom with your own stuff. As I'm learning.
So I'm not teaching, and Jamie's teaching what he's being told to teach by a school, and you're having workshops that aren't public performances. Are we to blame for the improv not being exciting and new and different that we're seeing? Because if we put on a show, right, or we taught what we actually talk or preach about, maybe we could change things, but we're not doing that.
Check this out, though. I am, and I'm going to toot my own horn again. A couple months ago, this gentleman who I work with a lot, I coach, he's decided recently, like, he's like, I want to do more improv. I'm going to do it. I want to like rent a space and have a show. And he invited Hey Day to play along with a couple other teams. And two of the other teams were teams that I coach. And I remember sitting next to some of the members of Hey Day in the audience, because the first two teams were going to go, I'd coach them. Kind of nervous, thinking like, this is like a kind of a public unveiling of my coaching and my directing. And guys, it was incredible. I was so proud of them. I cared. It was funny. It got deep. You know, I love that. And that was the first show. And I was like, let's see if we can do this again. And during the second show, I whispered to Zach, I go, this is the future of improv, bitch. And he started laughing. I was so proud of what had done, because that's been the big question. Will my new thoughts and philosophies about all this, will it translate to the stage, to an audience? And like we've talked about in previous episodes, there was a different expectation with this audience. They weren't coming to the Chuckle Hut for a laugh experience. It was kind of friends of friends who kind of knew the deal. So there was a different kind of theatrical vibe versus like just like a comedy show vibe. So I think people were there for that experience. And so it all kind of lined up. And I just felt pride. I felt no ego. I felt all pride. Like, wow, all this work, all these ideas, experimentation in the classroom, in these rehearsal spaces. And here we had two great shows. They were so great that I was nervous to go up with Heyday afterwards. Because, like, you know, Heyday does what Heyday does. And these other dudes, I don't know. It was a great experience. So, Sam, it was there, alive. I saw it with my own eyes. I laughed. I cared. You know what? 5 out of 5 would take my own class again. Oh, anyway, beautiful. This has been the Comedy Fix, everybody.
But yeah, Sam, as for my part, I do maintain some culpability for the lack of I don't want to even say growth in improv, because growth implies the correctness of a particular direction.
No, it doesn't.
But the lack of I think it does.
No, it doesn't. Think about nature. Growth is just growth. Like, you can have overgrowth.
But where do things grow? Don't things grow up?
They grow out. They spread. It's a mess.
Isn't that a direction?
Just let things grow.
Isn't
it's terrible. All right, boys. All right, guys.
See, this is why.
There's no implied direction.
No, it doesn't. No, things grow up.
It depends where the sun is.
Where is the sun? The sun is always up. Jesus Christ. Anyway, but I do maintain some culpability, I think, for not contributing to a change in improv. I mean, I think this podcast has helped kind of form the conversation to the extent we have any listenership at all. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know about, you know, teaching my own workshops. There's something nice about it, but at the same time, I don't know. I am not terribly interested in fostering other people's development. I don't know. And I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like I have a lot to say, but I don't know that I think anybody would really even care to hear it.
You know, what's different between you and me, Jamie, is I feel like I spent the majority of my improv life like not doing it the way I wanted to do it. And so at this point, I'm just like, I'm going like, hey, if anybody else kind of feels the way I used to feel, come check this out. And some people are like, wow, that unlocks something for me. This is a fun experience. And some are like, not for me. Whereas you, I know you've trained places you didn't love or teachers or this and that. But since I've known you, you've kind of done it the way you've wanted to do it, which I think is so cool. And so there might not be that burning desire to like sound this horn. I'm kind of like, hey, everybody over here, for those people who've, you know what I mean? And you're doing it your own way for a while now. Maybe there's something to that it's less about, I feel like I have something to say like new, and more just like, I want to invite people who might be feeling the way I feel. I know I've said the same thing 3 times in a row.
I think that makes sense. I think that makes sense. You feel maybe a new liberation or a new freedom, and you want to help other people feel that same sense of excitement and joy with it.
And you're like, I've been here, dog. I've been doing what I wanted to do.
I had that moment. I had that moment. And that's why, you know, I work with Sam and with you and, you know, when we started years ago already, is because I had that upbringing in the improv community where it's like, oh yeah, you know, community and yes and good space work and do this and that, and it's like, oh okay, and then what, and everything kind of just felt false in a weird way. So but yeah, so I working with you and Sam and in this podcast have been very cathartic for me. But yeah, I don't know, Sam, I mean, I feel like you have a, you know, you bridge the gap nicely between the mainstream and the punk. I feel like you could easily fill a workshop and really connect with people. What's stopping you?
It's the first time I think I've ever been called punk. I don't know what's stopping me. I mean, I'm, you know, during COVID, I relocated to a new city. And so I'm still trying to sort of understand the scene here. There are some classes that I'd like to be a part of. I've just kind of been busy. So I'm hoping maybe this summer I can participate in some of the theater stuff that's going on here. But I don't know. I mean, the stuff that I've been thinking about with comedy is very internal. I'm in a bit of like a crisis as a creator and like what I want to create and what does that mean? There were two articles, even like the newspaper today, about sort of comedic groups that I grew up with or comedic voice that I was aware of who were sort of like political in nature. And, you know, they're sort of one group was ending, the Capitol Steps, who did sort of like musical parody and you could hear him on NPR. And the other one's sort of conservative humorist, PJ O'Rourke, and he just died and the Capitol Steps is breaking up. And it's like sort of an end of an era in some way for some political comedy. And I think I'm thinking a lot about where my career is at with like big comedy, capital C comedy and all of that, and where I see comedy in my life and humor. And I don't think this is something I could commercialize right now in sort of a way that I could sell to some people, but it is trying to understand what I want to say or what I want to be a part of. You know, I don't know that I want to be part of a school, but I do think I want to produce something. And so I don't know if that's by myself or in a theater. I think improv would have some element to it because I think it's really exciting. But I don't want to do a Harold wearing, you know, a dark colored button down and black pants. I don't think that's where my next step is.
I don't think anybody does.
Is anybody doing the Harold? I mean,
well, check this out. Not that I know of, but I will say,
that's good.
The West Side sent out like the scorecards for what the judges who are judging will be scoring on. And one of the thing, like the first thing is like opening and another one is game. And I was like, this feels like they're expecting heralds because none of the teams I coach have openings and none of the teams I coach specifically chase game. I mean, game occurs, but they're not like looking for that setup. So I thought that was an interesting thing, like mm-hmm. Harold. Yeah, I mean,
what should be on the scorecard, Chris? Are you a judge, by the way?
No, because I'm auditioning.
Oh, fun!
Heyday has to audition, which I think is great.
Great,
good, like good for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to blow up their stuff, but I think they did get a couple things right. You know, one of them is like overall experience and stuff like that. Let me see this real quick. Yeah. Again, I don't want to. Blow up their spot because these haven't even happened yet. I mean, this is an interesting one. Is it funny? You know, good comedic timing and content.
I would think that's really important for the West Side Comedy Theater.
You're right.
That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, you know, scene work is on there. Yeah, I don't know. I guess, honestly, to me, I think it could be one question. And it would be, do I give a fuck? Do I give a fuck? 1 through 5. And that can mean, me cracking. I'm not saying that it needs to be serious. I'm saying that can mean me cracking up. That means I care. I care enough to like share, to have this emotion. Peter Fleury, I have to mention his name on every podcast, said something the other day about some team, whatever. And he's just like, yeah, it's always the girl who doesn't make any choices with the guy who's not very funny or something like that. Like, like trying to make a scene work. And that's a situation where I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Because I'm not saying me giving a fuck means that they have to stick the landing on things. I'm not saying that at all. Even if they're just trying something. Oh, that's interesting to me. the girl who doesn't make any choices with the guy who's never funny. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I think my scorecard would be like, will you tell someone to come see this show? Because like, I'm like, as you're talking about that, like, do you give a fuck? I'm like, oh, that's a show that Chris would talk about. And right. Like, I'm wondering, like, could you have a perfect scorecard show that like, honestly, no one cares about? Like, oh yeah, that was a good show. They did it. I don't, but it didn't have that like X factor. I don't know.
I think that's the majority of what's going on. This is going to be interesting too, because again, I don't actually know a lot of how these auditions are being ran because I'm a part of the auditions. I'm auditioning, but I've heard like there's some like older Second City teams that are putting themselves together with some like older respectable names. By older, you know what I mean? Like some,
oh my God,
you know,
the documentary of this would just be fantastic.
And then there's some like UCB teams coming through and stuff. And it's like, oh, interesting. Interesting. This whole thing is an interesting experiment because at the end of the day, can anybody bring a house? Can any team bring a house? I've kind of never seen it. I've seen the institution bring the house. I've seen if you have a team, the right slot at the right theater, the house comes. But it's pretty rare to be like, you know, someone's going to drive to Irvine to go see the Chainsmokers. Someone's like, I'm going to drive over to, going to La Jolla to catch Heyday. It's like, I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know. And I know that's going to be, that's part of the experiment here is like, you, here's a 3-month run. We're going to split the door. And because of that, we're hoping that you are going to provide a product that people will want to see. And I just kind of haven't seen that yet. Ever.
Yeah. I wanted to get it right because I just saw the Impro Theater is doing their Jane Austen Unscripted at the Gary Marshall Theater, which I think that's really? That one in Burbank, right?
In Burbank.
They do this every so often where they'll get, you know, it looks like they have two shows, April 16th and May 8th.
Huh.
And, you know, but they'll do costumes, right? And people, they can get, like, people who want to go to the Gary Marshall Theater, right? Your typical theater goer, it feels and looks like a play. You can get your Jane Austen fans, right? And it's the Impro, so I think it goes to that institution thing that you're kind of talking about, but...
That's cool. Yeah. That's really cool. I've just been focusing on my own stuff and meaning, and I've said this before, but like that the class is the performance, and I've really been enjoying that model. So like, it's just like, what a terrible thing to be like, all right, everybody, we've rehearsed. We know our stuff. Let's open the doors. And no one comes. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to live and die by attendance. So you come to the studio, to the class, and we fucking workshop, and we get shit up, and we're feeling it in the moment, and then we're done, and we walk away. You know? It's nice that way.
Jamie, I saw the Clown School. David Bridell is doing a Commedia dell'arte 2, which, boy, if there was one thing I would move back to Los Angeles for, it would be to take that class. But the part of doing the second level there is they're going to actually do a show. Who do you think is going to go see a improvised Commedia dell'arte performance?
Friends and family.
That's right.
And maybe some USC theater students. Mm-hmm. That's who I think. And that's unfortunate because I actually think Commedia has a lot to offer this moment in improv because it's a very, very powerful form of comedy. When improv to me feels a little weak right now. And I think Commedia does a lot of improv. So a lot of the principles, a lot of the core principles are the same, but it's very, very different. It's very nonsense based and sometimes abstract. And, you know, it's not really following a storyline so much as it is bits. And so I think that is an interesting direction maybe for improv. Our traditional improv as we know it. I think people are afraid when they see the masks and they think, oh, this is some kind of weird. I'm going to have to like walk like a duck in a circle.
Hey, duck walking can work. Duck. It hasn't been done yet, but it could. It could work. Scientists are researching it. Theatrical performers
the is,
are perfecting
Sam,
it.
Ducks waddle. Okay. That's why a duck walk doesn't work.
Can't believe this.
All right.
From the waddle school.
I like that though. But anyway, what I'm saying is I think a lot of that is the challenge to improv is the people who go to improv are kind of afraid of the other maybe weirder, less cool, because improv has kind of almost like a cool kid within the nerdy theater comedy community. Improv is kind of like the cool UCB, Amy Poehler, you know, New York City, all this stuff. And then you go to clown school in Eagle Rock and you're wearing a red nose and you feel like an idiot. But it's actually good for you. So that's one of the things, is I think the optics of clown and Comedia are not there for people to make that jump. I don't know. I don't know. That's why there's, you know, two or three clown schools in LA and 15 improv schools. You know, I don't think that's, I think that's telling in itself. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's sort of like on the borderline between improv and clown. I think it'd be an interesting thing for people to explore. I do kind of like you situating the improviser as maybe like a little bit nicer than the stand-up. Not like not mean enough to be a stand-up, but like too attractive to be a clown. And that's like what you end up on an improv team. I kind of love that spectrum of comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's like they made a Porsche 911, which is like a top model. And then they had the like the Porsche Boxster, which was like kind of the poor person's Porsche who wanted one but couldn't afford the next level up. And then there was a huge gap in the market. And to fill that market, they created improv. It's called the Porsche Cayman or something like that. And it's basically a middle grade model that was literally designed not to be the best car it could be, but just to fill the void in the market. To me, a lot of improv seems like it fills the void in the market. It's not chasing its potential. It's kind of just filling a little mediocre void. I don't know. And this is why no one wants to take my workshop.
I was wondering, is this available on Zoom? Could I?
Now, I have a question for you, Chris. Maybe this is not a good question to ask you because you have a stake in this fight. So maybe Sam will have more to say, but after the auditions for the West Side happen and the judges are sitting around that round table deciding who gets to get the 3-month spot, you know, because this is their first time doing this, so they want to make a good impact. The pressure's on right now. A year from now, maybe who cares, but right now they're really trying something, so there's extra attention and focus on it. With that in mind, Sam, Chris, what do you think that conversation is going to look like at that table when it happens? What percentage do you think is going to be the UCB teams who have a following, who, you know, have the names behind them and the experience and the heydays and the Cook County social clubs versus Joe and Schmo, who just kind of put a team together 2 months ago and are still working it out and nobody knows who they are? Realistically, I'm cynical, but I want you guys to save me on this one. What do you think that conversation is going to look like around that table?
I mean, that's so hard. It's so hard. That's such a difficult thing because I don't.
Sam, why don't you try this one? Because Chris has a stake in this fight.
Yeah,
I don't want to put him on the spot.
It's tough. I mean, the context I have for this is, you know, in television, you have programming and scheduling executives. And so, like, in a traditional network cycle, it's probably blown up by this point in time. But what you used to do is you'd have all these creators pitching shows in the fall, and then they would write pilots, and then a couple of them would get selected in the spring, and they'd shoot those pilots. And then by, like, May, you'd have these big upfront announcements where you'd announce your new shows. And the last people to make that decision were the programming and scheduling executives. And what they had to do was they had to sort of look at their own schedule, what they wanted to work where, how much space they had. And then they'd also look at like what else is going on and sort of try to fight that. And so, I mean, the thing you have to do with any audition, right, is the decision-making is so far out of your hands that like if Heyday didn't get a spot, I don't think Heyday should feel bad about it. Right, because there are so many other considerations that they're thinking about at that point in time, that I don't know that it'd be hard for any one team to say, like, this is a measure of our success. Because one, it's the first time they're doing this thing. They're coming out of a time when people aren't coming to see improv shows. So, like, who even knows what it's going to be like? Now is a time to try something if you want to try something new. Now is not a time to try something new if you want to like stick with something that's old and proven. So I think there's so much in that matrix of decision making that, you know, it's a business decision, it's a personal decision, it's hard. No, you disagree?
No. I mean, I don't disagree. It's just like, how do I say this? It's weird. It's a weird line I'm towing. It's, am I to trust that the individuals at the specific West Side Comedy Theater who are judging the auditions are as in tune with what the theater needs, like a network knows what it needs? No, you're dealing with three or four people who have their own versions of what they think is funny. Their own, and it's probably, I probably disagree with most of them philosophically at this point, because I'm kind of in a different dimension with this. And I guess what I'm saying is, I don't believe it's employees of the West Side Comedy Theater who are judging. I think it's like outside people who are being asked, like respected members of the community. So I don't know that they're like a casting session. I might have had the better audition, but if Homeboy has 1.2 million followers on Instagram, casting might go with him because it's better for the network. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the same thing at the West Side, because the people aren't working for the West Side who are running the auditions, right? I mean,
but are they then? I might be misunderstanding the whole process. That's totally fair. I might have this completely wrong. Are these outside people then selecting those teams? Like the highest scoring teams are in automatically?
I believe so.
Oh, interesting.
I believe so. And again, like we said, this is the first time and I don't know everything, but there is something to that. Now, I think this is difficult, because that's not to say if like Beer Shark Mice showed up, I don't know why I use them, I don't know, like that they wouldn't get the slot, even if they didn't have the best. I was about to say,
like TikTok House shows up. Like TikTok House has like 15 billion influencers.
I don't even know who that is. I don't know what that is. I don't know what TikTok is. Sure, right. That's interesting. Because again, it's not like there's like the CEO of the West Side being like, bring in TikTok House. Like it's just going to be like three to four judges who kind of know a bit about improv and have some experience. Like, I don't know. It's such a funky, weird idea. It's, I don't know what that conversation is, Jamie, because also if you're all not running the same play, what are those discussions looking like? Right. It's like, if the goal was, hey, what teams will bring in the most audience? Just that. Like, that would be an interesting conversation. I don't think it's going to be like that. So it's going to be this improviser from Chicago, this older improviser from Chicago who has their ideas of what they think is valid and funny and cool. Maybe with this younger person from LA who's taken some clowning workshops who thinks that's like an old way to play. I don't know what that conversation is going to look like. I will say this, Sam. I'm not worried at all about Hay Day getting a slot or not. At all. And one of the teams I'm coaching, I said something to them along the lines of like, don't worry. And this guy said, yeah, but would you have said that 5 years ago? And I was like, interesting. Because I thought it was just the times. Like, I don't know if improv slots are to be as coveted as they used to be, but maybe he's right. Maybe this person, maybe I'm just older and I don't need it as much. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is weird. Also, it's not like, maybe it's pandemic stuff, or maybe it's just improv in general, but it's not like getting a slot means you have a sold out house. I did a show recently with a team, with Pretty Pretty Pony, that was one of my favorite shows to do at the West Side. Usually sold out, celebrity monologist, rock and roll, just like a firework finale. Less than half the house was there. It felt pretty weird up on that stage. So I don't even know what that means anymore. An opportunity to perform for who? I don't know. I don't know. It's confusing.
Yeah. And I really don't know much about the process. So I'm like only guessing at stuff here, but it's like, yeah, do you want a sold out house, or do you want people who are performing like you're teaching in your school, or do you want, I mean, there may be.
I mean, I would imagine the West Side wants a sold out house, but probably. But that's kind of what I was saying before. Who's going to do that? I don't know that. I don't know that team. Because if that team really existed, I'd be like, hey, come on over. I would like, let's do another contract. You have your own night. Like, who's doing that? What improv team is our fans driving from all over the city to see? Does that even exist? Honestly, I don't know that answer. I think maybe some students might have some favorite Herald teams, whatever. But I don't, like I said, people who go see shows, like rock shows, no one's calling me up being like, hey, did you hear? Fucking Ghost Dog or something. I don't know. That's one of the teams that's auditioning. I shouldn't say that name. Is, you know, I don't know who they are. You know what I mean? Like, no one's doing that. Oh, I feel like I'm losing my
mind
right now.
Why not? I guess if we had that answer, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Why is it that we've spent at every theater I've been to in my whole life, everyone's trying to crack that code. Butts in seats. Like, maybe it's us. Like, maybe it's like nobody wants to see this shit. Because, like, the Irvine Improv doesn't have that problem. They get butts in, you know, like, what's up? I don't know, like, Second City Chicago, the butts and seats are there for their reviews, not for their improv, right? Their big song and dance shows. So it's like, this is great that we're finally back having a conversation, and we're going to end this podcast with, well, I've said it forever, improv is dead, it's not viable, everybody run, get out.
You know, I think... I mean, maybe that's why we stopped recording last year anyway. We'd already figured it out. But I wonder, I think improv might be its own worst enemy when it comes to audience and butts in the seats, is because, you know, the idea behind improv is a lot of, like, you know, support and fun and community and stuff like that. And that's just not a sexy show. Those concepts are not sexy, or like where you want to take a date on a Friday night to go see a community, you know, people enjoying their own community. It's like, that just doesn't speak to outside audience, particularly because if they're not in the community, then that means nothing to them.
That, absolutely.
Right? So absolutely. I think improv and the language around improv being like supportive and all these positive, great things that are actually nice, you know, in the real world, are not the kind of things theater goers or people who want to go watch a show are looking for.
Like, I think,
and so it kind of puts them off.
Yeah, I think there are like those like improv camps that are pretty popular, and that makes sense. Like, people who want to be a part of a community go into a thing, but you don't then sell tickets to the improv camp to watch people attend an improv camp. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the
whole, right? Because you're not in the community,
right?
You're not, like, in the community,
so
right?
Sit here and watch how they do. They know inside jokes and are breaking rules or following rules that you don't know as an audience.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I think, interestingly, community might be what keeps improv such a small community, because it's like it creates an in and an out group. Right. And so if you're on the out group, why would you want to go see people on the in group, you know, enjoy each other's company while you're sitting there on a date? It just doesn't even make any sense. You know, so yeah. I wonder if the language around improv should change to maybe something more dramatic or serious or more about the art and creativity of improv rather than about the community aspect of it. I don't know.
I mean, is it also a challenge that it's tied to theater? You know, when was the last time you went out to an actual play or like just a stand-up show even? I mean, I find myself doing that less and less. My girlfriend's in the other room watching Euphoria, which is a, you know, TV show in its like fourth season that she's finally catching up on.
Yo, that's my favorite show right now.
It's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty good. But it's like, it's just getting people into a comedy theater, I think, would be really challenging right now. To put on top of it this idea that it's like improvisation, which has a higher bar to entry than other sorts of live performance. I was struck by something. There was a big article with Greg Daniels, who's, you know, a writer on The Office and Parks and Rec, and he's got the show Space Force with Steve Carell. And he said the big change between season one and season two is that season one, they were focused on the visual look, and season two, they wanted the actors to improvise more. And I thought that was such an interesting way to sort of frame making a television show now. You know, we've had 2 years of people building home studios, doing Zoom improv. Does improv have to live in a theater? Can improv live in my house if I'm doing videos of some kind?
Look, dude, here's what's going to happen. I just saw the future. Well, you're right, Sam. You know, and I'm going to be pissed if I'm not a part of it, so I need to get to making it. But improv is going to infiltrate the mainstream in a way that maybe a lot of us aren't looking at. I had coffee with actually a friend of ours at the podcast, and Jamie's worked with him a little bit with Garrett, our buddy Garrett. Why can't I think of his last name, Jamie? What's
Richardson?
Richardson. Garrett Richardson. I coffee with him the other day, and he brought up that show that I had auditioned for, even this Murderville. Mm-hmm. You guys familiar with the show?
Yeah, it's new, right, on Netflix?
Yeah, it's a new show with,
Will Arnett.
Will Arnett. And every episode, he's, like, solving a crime. But every episode, there's a new guest who doesn't know what the crime is, and they're improvising. So when I hear something like that, I get, like, simultaneously, like, intrigued and pissed because I'm a hater. You know what I mean? Like, if it's improv and it's going to be popular, I want to be a part of it. But I remember when I auditioned for that show, I got the call, hey, casting wants to see you. A new guest is going to improvise. They're not going to know. Will's going to have a script and you're going to go. And I was like, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. This is fantastic. And I remember talking to the casting director. She's like, yeah, well, this particular episode, the celebrity like guest improviser will be Marshawn Lynch, an NFL football player.
Yeah.
And I was like, say what? And I've never seen an episode, so I can't comment to that. And I've looked through the cast list, and there's some LA improvisers that I recognize there. But it's still a little more like jokey, Jamie, right? Like, I thought I was auditioning to be like alongside Will to go solve a crime, and I improvise. Just like one of my favorite shows, Gravity Water, where he has a script and I don't. But instead, when I'm gathering, it's a little more cartoonish than that. Like, Marshawn Lynch isn't a trained improviser. So it's a little more like punked, almost a little more unscripted in that sense. Sam, have you said?
I would like to read a text message from my friend Jenny Sue Birnbaum, who did come and attended my improv class shows and blew up the comments with my girlfriend. They had a blast, but she texted me a week ago, Friday, February 4th. You need to watch episode 2 of Murderville with Marshawn Lynch. He might be the best improviser I've ever seen. So, I mean, I don't know if Jenny Sue, I have not watched the episode yet. I've pitched a version of that show where you had sort of a guest there who didn't know what's going on, which I think is super fun. And I think you're right. Like, there are other versions of this that will come along. I think this is based on a British show that I've heard is better. I do hear that it's kind of short for me. That's, but again, the thing. Like, that's, audiences love short form. Whose line anyway is short form? Like,
I know. But I'm thinking, is there, what's the other show that you worked on for a bit, Susie Barrett?
Just Roll With It.
Like, here we have Susie Barrett. And I don't want to shit on any endeavor. Like, that's fine. I'm sure it's a great show. But like, Susie Barrett's, you know, I'd say pretty known as a pretty great fucking improviser. I've always enjoyed her work. Funny, smart, you know, she's done a lot, man. She's put in work. And it's like, hey, for all that work, we're gonna here's where you're gonna land on a TV show. Let's improvise. Like, oh shit, that's what I want. It's like, and how it goes is, in the next scene, will he eat cake or will he eat poop? Is like kind of like, and I don't want to shit on that because she's probably having a blast, and I'm not speaking for her, but for myself, I hope that the next iteration of like improv in big entertainment is the stuff. How about this? Hope the next iteration of improv and entertainment is what I want to do. But like, is there a show where you tune in and it's not like Goofball Brigade? It's like, oh fuck, they solved the crime. Like, just a fucking fully, I don't know where I'm going, guys. I'm just so angry because I'm not smart enough to come up with the next thing. And I know it's going to fucking come. And I'm going to be like, I should have been on that. And then I'm just going to be that old man screaming that.
I think it's hard though, because, you know, sometimes words can get overloaded with meaning. And so, like, improvised gets kind of overloaded with meaning, and it means one thing to one group of people who have been trained in improvisation, and it means something else to another group of people who just kind of mean, like, well, they came up with it in the moment because we wrote it before. It's a scripted improvised moment. Like, what don't you understand about that?
let me tell you how stupid I am. And I don't recall when this epiphany occurred to me. I shouldn't even call it an epiphany because it's the stupidest thing, but it's true. And I might have said it here. I don't know. Jamie, I've been auditioning for commercials and television for a very long time. And most of the commercial auditions I audition for say, strong improv, all capital. Must be good at improv, all capital. looking for strong improviser, good actor, good improv. And so those are the ones I go on because my little resume has got my improv and stuff. This is so stupid. Everyone who's ever listened to this podcast is going to turn it off and throw their phone out of the car because it just hit me as I was getting ready for an audition. I was like, good at improv. I'm good at improv. So why? What's the disconnect? They want good improv. I'm good at improv. Why don't I book? And then I went, funny. When they say good at improv, they mean can be funny on the spot. Guys, I'm 42 years old. I've been doing improv for 25 years. That kind of just hit me. Because I don't really play funny. And not that I can't be funny and not being disparaging. I'm just like, oh, they don't mean somebody who like knows the ins and outs of good scene work. They literally just, my point is, it shouldn't say funny. It shouldn't say improv. It's just a can be funny. Mm-hmm. The drop of a dime. Hat? Whatever.
That's on spot.
That's what they mean. But yeah. Do you see how I was confused for a long time? Because no wonder I'm not booking. I don't do that. Hey, welcome. So it's a Miller Lite commercial. She's going to say, do you want one? And just go ahead and make it your own. Oh, I can't make that part funny. Like, I mean, I can, but like, you know, so what happens is me. Yeah. She's like, do you want a Miller Lite? And I'm like, that'd be great. Like, good connection. I care about the person. I know.
Eye contact. I had some
yes, work. And.
Yeah. And it's like, no one laughed. So like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, good Chris improv is bad for comedy. Chris literally got up and left the room. He disappeared.
He's disappeared. Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
No, you're not. I mean, I'll say this. Someone came onto the improv Reddit the other day. I'd love the improv Reddit. And he's like, this kid must be in like college. Like the poor guy's like 19. He's like, hey, like I'm auditioning for a short film. And it says like, you need to be good at improv. And like, I've never done improv before. I've taken like 2 acting classes. And like, I've got an audition next week. Like, what can I do to get good at improv before this audition? And the comments from the people are like, this takes a lifetime. Like, you could not possibly train for improv. And I just wrote on there, I was like, all right, get a friend, read a description of like a play or something, and like do a scene from the play together. Just like make it up. Like do 2 or 3 of those. Like they don't want you to improvise a Harold. They want you to like scream or like make a noise as yourself. Just like get comfortable with playing yourself without lines or whatever. But it was just so funny to me that like everyone was like, You can't learn to improvise in a week. It's like we improvise all the time. Like we're
also
always making up stuff.
Your friend said Marshawn Lynch might be the best improviser she's ever seen. You know, yeah. Here we are spending all our time and money in the lab, working, creating, yes, ending, no budding. And then Marshawn's like, what's up? Oh, I'll just do it real quick. And then leaves. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, that was great.
But see, if anybody has been listening to the last 65 episodes, that is what I have been saying, is that you don't need all the training and experience and blah, blah, blah to be good at improv, right? I mean, thank you.
Oh, no,
thank
we
you.
Can't. We can't release this episode. We only did some.
All right.
We can't validate.
Well, this has been the comedy fix. This has been the comedy fix.
What happened?
You're welcome.
We have
for
more
solving
time.
All of your
we
problems.
We have 3 minutes. We have to do
this. But see, what you see what I'm saying, though, is like shit, that Jimmy's freshness right. off. Oh, God. Sam will rarely admit. You heard him argue my growth comment. He argued that into the ground.
He
has been silenced by this. But the bigger point is that I that's good news for everybody, right? That makes improv accessible, and it makes it's a whole. I don't know. It tanks the improv economy. You know, the bustling improv economy. It's probably got as it's probably as strong as you know. I don't know Belize's. Economy at least. But that's very exciting to me that all these novice people who have never done it before are all now like crushing it. I mean, let's read the tea leaves, people.
I love the idea that there could be a Marshawn Lynch school of improv. Like that would be fantastic. I'd sign up in a minute.
We need to get rid of the word improv, I think. Maybe that's not it. But like it's different Marshawn Lynch would crumble in my studio, okay? I would rip him a new one. But it's not fair to say good at improv or when I hear people say, I'm not bad at improv. I mean, I'm bad at improv. Like, what are you saying you're bad at? Are you bad at being funny on the spot? Are you bad at creating or developing a point of view in real time? There's so many fucking facets. Like, I know Marshawn Lynch isn't creating, or he might be inadvertently creating a point of view, a strong point of view. But like, what are we fooling ourselves, guys? Like, does the whole world think improv means one thing and then just a fucking dorky small section of us think it means something else? And we're spinning our wheels and going in and out and taking the classes and doing all training and in workshops and camps and shit. When the rest of the world's like, be funny without reading something. Is that?
Yeah, maybe. I'm also reminded of a friend of the show, Craig Kukowski, who had the show of like bringing up someone who'd never improvised, right? And he would perform with them. And so really what we might be saying is that the ensemble around Marshawn Lynch is doing a really good job making him look good.
True that.
Yeah.
True that. We should watch. I gotta watch that. I should watch that show.
We should watch it, and we should have another episode.
Maybe we should have like a live stream episode where we watch it and comment on it. And Chris gives his notes, Sam gives his notes, and I give my notes. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants
that. Nobody wants that. But yeah, I think to address what you just said, Chris, I think forming the school and developing a curriculum and thinking you have an idea about what the rules are, when you start putting those in people's heads, you actually slow them down, right? Because now they're trying to get it right. You've set a goalpost and they're trying to meet it because that's how we've all been trained to exist. And so when you have a school, when you have a teacher who's saying, yes, and make eye contact and do whatever, I think that actually slows people down. I think people do most of that organically, naturally, right?
Yes. I don't know. I think maybe what we should have been calling all these training centers and theaters for the last 50 years should have been called Herald. Like, you learn how to swim. And so if you're learning how to swim, there are things you kick your feet, you hold your breath to like get across the pool, whatever. Like, improv is just too wide. But yes, and this stuff is fits for Herald. So it'd be funny to be like, we're looking for improvisers and we're looking for Heralds. What do you do? What's your specialty? I'm a Herald. Oh, great. Good. Okay, so we know that this person's really good at relationship or can that stuff. You? You know what I'm saying? Like, because you're right. But Jamie, it's like we are slowing them down by adding these rules if the goal isn't Herald. If it is Herald, well, we're actually giving them guidelines and building blocks and some helpful hints along the way. But if we're not learning Herald, oh, dude, I'm losing my mind. Welcome back to the comedy fix. You know, like it's different.
But the Herald was chosen for everybody.
I know.
Who would choose the Herald?
I know.
I guess it's a fine concept, but why would it know? Who chose that?
Because it came out of nowhere, right? So nobody's like gonna like contest like why did we choose car? Like, why didn't we think of something? Like, I don't know. Just there was no car, then there was car. Now I'm a car guy. there was no performative improvisation on a mass scale. Then it became Herald, and now I guess I don't know. It was a stupid fucking analogy. Sam,
I really,
fix this.
I love the idea that now there are all of these like sides casting, asking for people with Herald training. And there's this one actor who's like, I was a Herald for King George. My father was a Herald. And I keep going out on these Herald auditions and I keep announcing and they don't get it. And it's just like, again, like we overload shit and people, there's always going to be someone who's like left out of this.
I know. Yeah. But wouldn't it be kind of cool if they were like, must be funny on the spot. In audition breakdowns, because I would probably pull out of a lot of those. Like, oh no, that's not really what I do.
That's what we did with, and I can't remember who we did this with. Was it Jim, the middle school teacher?
Yeah.
We took the rules as, you know, they're commonly thrown around, and we actually said, what do they actually mean? That's kind of feels like what you're talking about. Is like they're not asking for improv because you gave them improv and they didn't like that. What they wanted is you to be funny on the spot, right? So it's like a clarity issue people don't know how to either write or express themselves. Maybe the casting directors don't know nuances of improv, so they can't speak the language.
And so, Jamie, we're doing a disservice to the 10,000 actors in Los Angeles whose agents tell them to take an improv class because people want improv experience, when really what they want is funny experience. So what class can I take that's called Be Funny Now? Because remember, go to any improv class in the city, even the ones that promote are more comedic than, say, mine. They do say, Sam, first rule, don't try to be funny. Don't try to be funny. So what are you doing to all these impressionable actors, old or young, whatever, I was going to say young, but let's just say young actor who's just came from out of the state, who's like, first rule of improv, don't try to be funny. Okay, I got an audition that says, must be good at improv. Oh, good, I'm in an improv class. Well, I know the first rule is don't try to be funny. So if they want improv, they must know first rule is not don't try to be funny. And then you're Chris Alvarado, and then you don't book. So I'm going to come up with a school that says funny now, always. And I'm going to teach you how to be the funniest person at any given moment all the time. So that, and then I'm going to say, hey, the trick is when they say improv, they're looking for funny now, always, the Chris Alvarado classes. Because no one taught me that.
First of all.
Yeah.
That's a great name. I'd go to that show.
That's a great name. That's a great idea. I would take that class. Oh, hey, I would love to learn like your tips and tricks on how to be funny right now. Yeah. Like I'm at a dinner party with my boss, his wife, and his son. And he drops something on the floor. This is my opportunity, right? It's like, I want your class to help me make that into a moment.
Yeah, that's right. Building all these scenarios. You can even categorize it like, here are the 10 scenarios we will all be in at least once in our lifetime. You know what I mean?
Right. Networking, meeting an in-law.
At the urinal, at a baseball game.
Oh, yeah.
In this moment, you look over and you're
a teller or cashier.
That's exactly right. And then if you want to take my more advanced classes, we get into more nuanced scenarios. But these are you get the 10 for this price. Funny now, always.
Funny now, always.
And then I want to go to the casting people and commercial and be like, hey, everybody, hey, real quick, sorry, quick meeting. You've been saying you want good improv. You need to just say you need to be funny when we need you to be funny. Funny, that's what we need. We need you to tell us actually that the writing, that the copy could use some zhuzhing. That the people you paid to write the copy for this Taco Bell spot are good, but you want us to make it better on the spot. And also let us know that we don't need 16 months of a training center to get there, to be learning what a tag out means, because that's not going to help you book by doing a funny button of this Taco Bell spot, because that's what you're looking for. You're not looking for how good we can tie worlds together or character exploration that we spent our entire lives chasing that because we thought that there was some kind of fucking crossing over between what we think improv means and what you think improv means. So, sorry, there's been a big miscommunication. Everybody, if you want to drop out of those improv classes now, you can. If you like doing the Herald, continue doing that. Just know there will be zero crossover, because we have a guy here who's been doing it for over 20 years and has had very little success in this industry, in the industry that claims to want improv. And then I'll be like, hi. Sorry. So there you go.
That's your one-person show, Chris. But I love that. But that's what made me ask that question to you both 30 minutes ago already. Is what do you think that conversation around the judges table at Westside is actually going to look like? Not what their scorecards say, because game, who cares? But what are they actually looking for? What do they actually want on their slot? Because I bet you put the scorecards next to who actually makes the thing, there's probably going to be a little crossover, but not a one-for-one, you know?
So are you leaning towards, are you hinting that you think it's whoever got most laughs per second? Meaning, will the conversation be they were the funniest?
They want to know who's going to bring in butts in the seats. They want to know who has a following.
You can't tell that. You can't tell that from 20 teams, right? I mean, maybe like one team, maybe you've kind of heard of.
I bet most teams have been heard of, or at least maybe not most. I really don't even know who's in the audition, but I bet the ones who have a following, who have a known following and a known name and a brand and have been doing it for more than 5 years. Almost all of those teams, unless they absolutely blow it, will get a spot.
Interesting.
I think 70% of the slate that the West Side is going to pick is going to be these ones who have a following, and then they're going to pay lip service to, you know, the diversity and inclusion and let everybody get a chance. And they're going to have 30% to people that I've never heard of, or, you know, the people who are maybe trying different things, who don't have the following. My cynical brain says that's going to be the breakdown. And maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am wrong, because I want to believe that people are, you know, changing, but I don't see it. I just can't believe it. I can't believe they would pick a bunch of people who have never been heard of at the, and then Poo Poo Heyday and
well,
Baby
I don't
Wants
know.
Candy
I don't
and all
know.
These other ones. You know?
I don't know, Jimmy, because like, I don't know, part of me feels like this is a good time for Heyday to kind of fucking either shit or get out the pot ourselves. Like, why should we be holding these coveted spots when there are people that are probably doing something, I don't know if it's better, but different, whatever. Also, as far as established improv teams in the city, I'd say, you know, we're not number one, but we're top. I don't know. We're up there. Hey, people have heard of Heyday. We don't have a following. There's no following.
I think you do, actually. I mean, maybe people wouldn't drive to La Jolla to see you, but if they saw your name, if they saw your name on like a slate, they'd be like, "Oh, I'll stay for the 10
o'clock." I guess there is that. Yes. Thank you. And you're right. That just feels different to me than driving to La Jolla, I guess.
I mean, I wouldn't drive to La Jolla to do anything.
Well, guys. This
when are the auditions? I would love to have a follow up episode.
Yeah, you got it. The auditions are, I think, in 3 days.
Oh wow. Exciting.
Today's the 19th of February. The auditions are the 20th, 21st, and 22nd. So tomorrow, actually.
Wow. Well, I hope I'm wrong, because I, like we said at the beginning of this episode, the improv kind of still seems the same. And so I would hope for an evolution, a progression, some growth of the improv scene.
Yeah.
And I am cynical that we won't be seeing that anytime soon.
Well, I hope we do. And I know you hope we do as well. You're just cynical about it. I hope we do, because, I mean, I don't know. Come on. It's time. It's been time.
I can't wait to see Marshawn Lynch and the Seahawks perform at Westside Comedy Theater. It's going to be the best show. I'm so excited. I really hope they pick him.
You know who was a guest one time with Mission Improbable? Eddie. Shoot. Basketball player. People love him. He was a Clipper. Known for kind of being funny on like Fallon and stuff. Griffin? Blake Griffin?
Oh, yeah.
Was he a Clipper?
Blake Griffin was a very big Clipper.
Just come on stage. You come on stage with MI. I was bartending and I watched it. Just be charming and funny and cool and murdered. It's like, fuck, dude.
I mean, we could go on a whole thing about sort of like the sports personalities and like who translates and who doesn't, because that's a whole thing too. But I always love that wrestlers took improv shows. All that.
Oh yeah, stuff. Yeah. Well, maybe in another. How many months has it been since our last episode, Jamie?
4?
Yeah, maybe 4 more months from now. Or maybe next week. Who knows, everybody? Who knows? Well, this has been great. I love talking to you guys. I love seeing your faces. Sam, Los Angeles misses you, but you're probably better off, dude. Fuck this place. You know what I mean?
You know, I'll get back there at some point.
You'll get back here at some point, of course. Yeah. Jamie, anything else you want to say on the way out? People need to find you anywhere or do anything?
No. I have more to say, but we'll just have to save that for another episode.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, same. Thanks for listening, everybody.